Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, my name's John Carosella, and I'm your host for Convergence on Firefly Willows LIVE. Convergence is to consciousness as gravity is to the material world. In small amounts, gravity is overwhelmed by every other fundamental force of the universe. But gravity has something nothing else has. It's cumulative. The more matter you collect, the more gravity you get, until it becomes the most powerful force of the material world. I think convergence is like that too. Only in this case, we're working with truth. The more truth we collect, the more convergence we experience. Connections, relationships, resonance of ideas and concepts, science and mysticism. Lately, deep truths just seem to be coming together, even as many of the illusions around us are falling apart. As within, so without. As above, so below. I know I'm feeling it, and I'll bet you are too. For the next 90 minutes, we'll be exploring concepts and topics that in some way or another bring us around to a deeper truth. Join me and my guests for this week's experience of Convergence.
Thanks for joining us for today's program. Listen in as John shares the insights he's gathered about the divine feminine through some unlikely sources. John talks with a shining example of enlightened youth, Emily Clark. He'll also share performance art by Maya Apollonia Rodet about the creatrix and where we can find her. And John and Deb talk about being an expectant mother in our occasional segment, Fire and Water. Next up, John moderates this week's roundtable on How Do You Experience Receiving Love? Stay tuned.
Welcome to today's Firefly Willows LIVE Roundtable. I'm your host, John Carosella, together with my co-hosts, Deb Carosella.
Good morning.
And Heisi Lutmers.
Hello.
And unfortunately, we're missing Mildred Lynn. She is not well today. But I do happen to have my cat, Amber, on my lap, so she may chime in and help us with this topic. And in fact, she's particularly well-suited to. The topic today is, how do we experience receiving love? And I wanted to touch on this because I know in my life, I'm a particularly active, principle kind of person. And I spend a lot of my awareness in the process of doing, taking action, being productive, and so on. And it's also true in the aspect of my experience of love. I tend to be more aware of the moments in which I am giving or projecting it out into the world than I am when it's being offered to me. And I think that's a reflection of our busy, get it done, be productive culture too. A lot of our cultural programming is about doing and producing. And I was just wondering, you know, and the whole show today is going to be about love and exploring the divine feminine, this receptive principle, in particular the receptive principle in the context of love.
There are levels of love, and love can come from many different places. If anyone has ever owned a companion animal, if anyone has ever had a pet, you know that there's unconditional love there. And some scientists may say that that's not actually love. It's just the animals are taking advantage of the fact that they have someone's caring for them and they're having their needs met, and we're anthropomorphizing, that word is, that we're projecting human emotion on an animal psyche, and that's not something that can happen. I don't believe that. I've had animals around me my entire life, and I know that they feel things and they have emotions, and there's nothing quite like the unconditional, unreserved affection and love
that a pet can shower upon someone. And I find that that's probably a very, very safe love to accept, a very safe love to receive. And there's, outside of the fact that you have some sort of a contract to care for this animal, it's very easy to return that love without any strings.
Well, what does it feel like to receive it?
For me, it's
kind of offer of love.
I would say that it's not usually as simple when dealing with another individual, when dealing with another human being, because there's always some, or there appears to be, that there's always some sense of a need on the other individual's part that is their need, not your need. And so it seems as though there can be levels and layers and strings, and I'm offering you love under these conditions, or if you meet this for me, I'll do that for you sense. And so it's wonderful to be receptive to love from another person. And it's also very fulfilling, and, you know, people live entire lifetimes totally devoted to another individual. And that's wonderful. But I think it would take time to get there. It's not quite as straightforward as something.
Do you think it feels it would feel the same?
It probably feels.
As the love you get from a cat or a dog or.
I would imagine that there are levels and layers of richness involved.
Receiving love is complex, and love is risky. And is about taking a risk. And that's what a lot of people fear doing or don't want to have to navigate through. So they often block or shut themselves down from receiving love unless it's going to be easy or simple, or they know exactly how it's going to go rather than enter into the complexity of figuring it out along the way. And I think that, you know, she was talking about how there's that concern that a person offering love, it comes with strings or conditions, which would speak to the idea of unconditional love. And what does that feel like? And I think that perhaps we can't truly experience or receive love at different levels until we have learned to and experienced what it's like to give love in that way. So if we have experienced what it's like to give love unconditionally, then we will know what it feels like if someone is offering love unconditionally versus with condition. But it may be that we have to first look back at ourselves and say, do I offer love with conditions or with strings? And that's what I know love feels like. Therefore, I know what that feels like when somebody is offering love in that way towards me. But we may not be able to open or be receptive to what the process, whereas passive implies more that it just happens to me or comes to me without me doing anything. And so the active part would be making the choice to stop and allow love to come in rather than being passive, which means I want love to come to me, but I don't want to have to do anything to change myself or the way that I'm operating in life. So hopefully it'll find a way in there at some point and see if it can squeeze into my calendar somewhere. But if we actively stop, we may be surprised as to how much love there is around us and where that love is coming from. Because I think what gets in the way for a lot of people is they expect, which is a problem in and of itself, having expectations, especially around love. But they expect it to look a certain way, to come from a certain place, to come in the form of a certain person. And so if they're not actively stopping and opening themselves to be receptive to love wherever, whatever direction it may be coming from, whatever form it may be taking, whoever it may be coming from, rather than who they think they expect or need it to be coming from, then that choice, that action will actually allow them to receive love much more readily and abundantly than what they may think there actually is in their life.
Mm.
And one other thing that I think gets in the way for a lot of people in terms of allowing themselves to receive love, which I think is a big thing, because a lot of people don't allow or give themselves permission to receive love because they have a lot of stories going on in their head about how they're not worthy of love, or, you know, that kind of person can't love me, or I won't be able to love them back enough, so I can't accept what they're offering because I won't be able to reciprocate in kind. Which, if it's true love that's being offered, then there is no expectation of reciprocation of whatever form. If there is, that's great, but it doesn't have to be like, oh, I give you this amount of love, so you have to give me this amount back for me to continue loving you. But I think that another big thing that gets in the way for people is the fear of loss and the fear of losing love once they get it. So it's, you know, it kind of goes to that cliche, better to have loved and to have lost than to never love at all. A lot of people are so afraid that at some point they will lose the love or the source that the love is coming from, that they, everything is going to end in loss of some sort. So therefore, they stop allowing themselves to receive because they don't want to risk, there's that word again, mm-hmm. they don't want to risk losing the love or the source of that love the way they may have experienced before.
Mm-hmm. Very provocative. Thanks, I see. I want to just touch on one other thing, and that is, how do you prepare yourself to receive love? And when you're...
I don't think it's a head... place. Hmm. I don't think it's a thought place.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is more of a centered in the body place that we would recognize it or feel it. And for myself, I think a lot of it, a lot of my emotional response is tied to my stomach digestion area.
Hmm.
And when things are not correct or at odds, I get queasy. I get nauseous. So when I feel comfortable, when I feel good, there's a sense of rightness, solidness, wholeness in my center, you know, slightly below the heart. When I think of my core, I don't only think of my core being centered at the heart, up at that height. Mm. It's a deeper, lower, really in the middle of the body.
Plexus.
So I guess the solar plexus area, for those people that are more aware of where that is. And when that's very solidly filled, I think that's where I would feel it. That's where I'm connected.
That's where you feel it when you're receiving.
Yes.
Okay. Does it feel different when you're giving? That can maybe come from different places?
I think that probably does come from slightly different places.
Or maybe more a variety of places?
Yeah. I think it's a more varied and maybe even a more universal. There's more of those spots engaged as opposed to when being received.
Oh, interesting. I see. What do you got there? Anything? Hey, I'm digging around here because I think it's going to be useful for me at least.
He actually did have this question.
Wondering, how am I going to return this?
Mm.
How am I going to live up to this? How am I worthy of this? And if we start looking at the ways that we think we're not worthy, that we won't be able to return it or offer it in some way, then we start to feel very constricted or tight. And if we're truly receiving love, then it would feel expansive. We would feel totally at ease and at peace or content with whatever is coming to us from that source of love. I think that feeling as if you can breathe, you know, because again, if you're feeling constriction, it starts to become hard to breathe. And if you're truly open to receiving love, then you feel you can breathe easier. You may feel as if each breath you take is more nourishing or enlivening in some way. It kind of sparkles in some way versus feeling as if, well, you know, you tighten that throat and you're like, I don't know if I'll be able to live up to this, to return this, to be worthy of this. And sometimes I would say if you're actually receiving love openly and completely, then in some ways you don't feel anything at all. You just are. You just experience it. It's like with some, because that's the experience you're having in that moment, because you're totally open to it, and there's no thought process. Your mind is not in the way.
Yeah. Something that is coming up for me is this notion of surrender, of willingness, of a willing surrender to the present moment. Does that sound familiar to you guys?
Well, yeah, because you're not comparing it to something that happened in the past to see if it will be better.
And you're not anticipating a future complication.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're just allowing it to be what it is in that moment. See where it takes you. And don't need it to somehow compensate for something that happened in the past or live up to something that happened in the past.
Or fulfill an expectation you have about the future, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Out in the world. So that's it for our roundtable today. Stay tuned for the rest of the show. And remember, next week we'll have our live call-in show. So stay tuned for that as well. Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, good morning.
All right, thank you.
Are you creating your own non-optimal reality? Might your hidden beliefs be hijacking your manifestation machinery? Join shamanist, radio host, and compassionate adventure guide, John Caracella, on a journey to the prince.
Welcome back. This is Convergence, and I'm your host, John Caracella. And with me today for our spirited conversation is Emily Clark. And we are on location in Aptos, California, overlooking the ocean on a beautiful sunny day. And we're actually outside, so we're going to hear some hummingbirds flying back and forth and maybe some other wildlife, and I'm anticipating it to be quite a delightful experience. Now, my guest, I've asked Emily to be on the show with me today because we were having coffee and talking about the many things that happen in life, and Emily started talking about love in a way that I thought was extraordinary, and not just extraordinary for a young woman of 17, but actually extraordinary for a person of any age. And I thought, given that the theme for this month's show is about love and the divine feminine and understanding the divine feminine, this was some wisdom coming from somebody who was very young that I thought we as an audience ought to have a chance to listen to. So I've invited Emily on the show. Emily works at Pete's Coffee in Aptos. So if you want to ask her an important question, you can maybe find her there. She also does tarot readings for friends and crystal healings and so on and so forth. So as an emerging adult in the landscape of this new world that we're building, I thought it would be fun to have Emily on the show. So welcome, Emily.
Thanks, John.
So here we are, it's February, and we're thinking about contemplating all the aspects of love, that the ways we can find them in our lives. What does love mean to you? And tell us a little bit about your experience of it.
To me, love is more than a feeling. It's a lifestyle. It's something that you think about with every decision that you make. And when I say love, I'm not speaking of that I love you and let's make out and I want to touch you love. It's the unconditional, just complete acceptance and compassion that someone can feel towards anything. And it's the knowing that you're going to be okay, and it's release, and it's laughter, and it's joy, and it's a combination of all the best feelings in the world encompassed in one being, in one. Sure. The way that I've kind of dealt with it, and that's really gotten me through, is it's happened recently. It's when I decided that this is my life, and the choices that my parents have made, the choices that my friends have made, my family, and the people who kind of have helped push me along the road that I'm going today, those are their choices. And it all started when I stopped taking things personally. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. And that just opened up an entirely after kindness and compassion, forgiveness, journeys, harmony, just true bliss. And I don't want any of this icky crap that other people have kind of just dropped their baggage on my path, you know what I mean? So growing up, especially with some parent troubles with my dad, especially, he's a very closed up kind of guy, and I'm not. And having that as your father, not really being able to communicate with him on the level that you would like to and just be with him, and you'd think out of all the people in the world, your parents would accept you the most, and just you could be yourself around your parents. When it really clicked to me that I couldn't do that with my father is when I started to approach the situation in just love.
So you said when you decided to stop taking things personally.
Right.
Share a little bit about that.
Well, I can just link that onto the story I'm saying right now. My dad has made some icky decisions in his life, and he moved to Ireland when I was 14 years old, and I haven't lived with him since then. And, you know, of course, growing up as a child, and even today, I think if maybe I wasn't such a rebel teenager and, you know, just being a kid, he would have stayed. And then I realized that my dad has his own stuff that he's dealing with, and I can't take that personally. His decision to move, it's not about me, and that's his story. He's going through something, and in order to deal with that, he needs to leave. You know, my dad was he's his own person. I just came into his life as his daughter. I'm not his life. And that goes to anyone that you meet or come into contact with. So when people make decisions that you don't necessarily agree with, not taking them personally and knowing that it's usually in the interest of their greatest good kind of is a little bit comforting. And this realization also struck me when I was younger. I was probably about 12 years old, and I read The Notebook by Nicholas Sparks. And I have the quote with me that kind of woke me up a little bit.
Okay.
And here it is. And it says, when you're struggling with something, look at all the people around you and realize that every single person you see is struggling with something. And to them, it's just as hard as what you're going through.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and so what did that, how did that affect you?
Well, because I would have my stuff going on. I'd be flustered, come home and be angry, or even today, you know, I work at a coffee shop, and I come into contact with tons of people every day, and some of them are really crabby, and some of them don't look like they're having a good day. I remember once in the summertime when I was working downtown Santa Cruz at Pete's Coffee there, a customer came in to order some coffee beans, and she was just in a really funky mood, and she was really rude, right, I'll help you in any way. I have tomorrow off. If you need me to pick up the coffee and deliver it to the service home, then I will absolutely do that for you. And she started to cry. And I couldn't believe it, and I gave her all my information. I told her it was going to be okay and that this was going to pass over and all the help she needed would come. And about a week later, I got this email came in to work, and one of my coworkers pulled me back. Emily, there's email about you. What'd you do? I was like, crap, what did I do? And he opens it up, and he's like, oh, wow. And the woman had emailed the head of Pete's Coffee saying that she has something new to love in Santa Cruz now besides coffee, and that she would come in to visit me every time she came to visit Santa Cruz. and that her day was changed by that little act of compassion and love.
Well, I don't know about you guys out there, but I have tears in my eyes right now. That, you know, there's such an intrinsic and reach out and offer compassion and care. And when you do that, I mean, you change people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Emily, you change that woman's life. You know, like, at a moment when she was extraordinarily vulnerable, you were a balm. You were soothing and supportive. And, you know, why don't we do that every day?
Pete's Coffee, you taught me a lot more than roast and coffee. So I was really hungry. I was on my lunch break, and I got this bomb bagel. It was like pesto and cheese and like, oh, it was so good. And I was looking forward to eating it. And there's this guy just standing on the sidewalk, and he was hungry, and I was hungry, he was hungry, I had half of this beautiful bagel, and I thought to myself, there's a moment, and I have to acknowledge it, that I was being selfish, and I said, I like this bagel, and I want it all for myself, but really, I only need half of it, and this other human being is hungry. There's no human being who should ever be hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. First of all, let me just repeat that, no human being should ever be hungry. There's enough food for everyone. And it's a matter of looking at what you need and what you want. And so in that moment, I offered him the bagel. And sometimes when you catch yourself, you will get rewarded because he didn't even want it. So I got to eat the bagel. And
did you offer it to him?
I absolutely offered it to him, but he looked at it and he said, oh, that looks good, but no, thank you. So
wow.
I was able to confront that opportunity and choose love and compassion for another human being, and I didn't even have to really give anything up, just for being honest. Little rewards happen like that all the time. Oh, or, you know, I kind of want that, or kind of want this, or, you know?
When I was hungry, you offered me food. When I was thirsty, you offered me drink. You know, these things are so simple.
Mm-hmm.
And you do get surprised. It's like there was an opportunity for you to live your truth.
Mm.
And you didn't suffer any loss.
No, not at all. And I wouldn't have suffered loss if I had given away half that bagel. It would have been so rewarding to see him enjoy it as well. But it was nice. It was like I kind of thought of the angels being like, ah, good girl.
For information on Firefly Willows, please explore our website, fireflywillows.com, or like us on Facebook.
Welcome back. This is Convergence. I'm your host, John Carosella, speaking with the amazing 17-year-old young woman, Emily Clark. And she's going to share with us a story.
Hey, earlier that day, I had really broken up with my boyfriend, kind of really drew the line.
Oh, that day.
That day, which was yesterday.
Mm.
And I was hesitant about going because I was just feeling, you know, icky like you do when you break up with someone sometimes. But I went anyway. And so I was really into the music, and this beautiful, beautiful, wonderful, amazing song was playing, and I was dancing and spinning. And this sudden just like a epiphany just printed on the tie-dye in big, bold words, and they were going into the middle of it, and just the tie-dye was eating it away with the music. And I just felt it go out of my body, and not just, oh, it felt so good. And I was spinning and dancing, and I left it all on the tie-dye. And what I left on the tie-dye was monetary concerns, sadness, resentment, you know, feeling like I don't have enough and being worried or self-conscious in the middle and big, bold, beautiful black letters was ego. Because I was like, I don't like this crap. I don't want it in my life anymore. And so ego went on the tie-dye and it just span and went away and sunk into the wall of the tie-dye. And when I got home, I wrote a poem about it, which I didn't read until this morning. And when I was fully awake, and I was like, this is awesome. This is a great little poem, which I would love to share with you guys.
Oh, please do.
And it says, "Hello, happy tie-dye. I see you staring at me. You look mighty fine tonight, good sir. I've come to see the dancing. Spinning and swirling of teal, yellow, green, and white, I span some spin and then close my eyes. I thought of a vortex in a space without time, hence the stars and the moon and the double-headed dolphin. But deep in the depths of the space without time, most importantly, I dumped all the things that weren't mine. I threw them to tie-dye with every spin that I spun." And it was like instant gratification immediately when I let that go. Beautiful things started spinning into my body. Love and energies of violet and blue and just pure, like, ecstasy. Just wonderful feelings. And mind you, I was pretty sober. Otherwise, it was all me. And
so,
it was cool.
So what did it take? What process had to happen in you to release? What did that feel like, or what had to shift in you in order for you to open the door to letting all that out?
I just had to surrender. And when I surrender, I literally picture myself with my arms open and usually under the light of Luna or a beautiful Father's sky, and I'll just open my heart as wide as it can go and open my shoulders and kind of plant my legs firmly in the ground and just surrender. And that's all you can do. And that goes in hand with trust that everything's going to be okay. And when I did that, when I surrendered ego. I surrendered, like, you know, my feelings towards people that I liked or didn't like or had a crush on or thought were watching me. I just let it go. It doesn't matter who's watching you. You know, the angels are watching you. The fairies are watching you. And man, they love to see you happy and dancing and just being one with your soul, just being connected. And, you know, if they're by my side, then that's all I need. That's how I look at it. Once I did that, surrendered, I was able, it was like a door opening in my heart for everything to just flush right on out. And I remember, I was explaining to my friend Joe last night, we were in the car, and I said, I've been thinking about water, and I, when I didn't even release it, so keeping in mind the visualization of water flowing, and just being one with the current, and accepting new changes to come and old ways to just kind of flow back into the web of life.
I trust, I hope and trust that you will continue to exhibit this kind of mastery, right? Because this is leadership. You know, we need leaders. We need people who can take those risks, right? Now, many of us have heard the term surrender before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we think of surrender, you know, actually this is a topic, we talked about surrender on a previous show on Firefly Willows LIVE, and, you know, it was brought up that we think of the word surrender and we think it means giving up.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to mean that. It can mean giving away. It can mean giving in to what is, right? And not fighting it and making it a place of darkness and
yeah.
confusion and turmoil and pain.
Well, that's, you can do that to anything. You can take the ickiest word there is and flip it around. It's about perspective, I think. And when I look at surrender, surrendering is never a sign of weakness in my book. My dad, two phrases that really stuck with me is, doesn't mean you're weak to turn the other cheek, and it takes a real man to apologize. And I don't like the patriarchy in that, but if you replace it with woman folk or men folk, you can use it universally to however you please. But surrendering Surrendering.
Why was it possible for things to come in when you let things out? Why couldn't they come in anyway?
I feel like Jesus, you're asking me these really serious questions.
Yeah, well, hey, you're on the show.
What are the answers to life? Wow. You know, I guess letting something go, you should never feel that attached to something that if it's gone, you feel like you're losing something. You should never get that close to something because life is changing all the time.
That's why I ask you these hard questions, because you have amazing wisdom just in there.
Yeah, somewhere deep in there.
No, it's great. That's great. So yeah. It comes back to attachment. And if you're not attached, and if you are attached, it's an inefficiency like your engine's not running smoothly or something.
Oh, man. Feeling like you lost something is the worst. Happiness I had with him, and hold that in my heart and project it so everyone can enjoy it. Those are the things you need to hang on to and that really matter. It's not the material. It's that beautiful color bursting from inside of you that you get when you're in that space. That's the important stuff. And then once you're in that space, so much will come to you. Always, anything you need, even things you want, will come to you so fast. It's like a direct connection to the divine. If you're connected in that space of love, everything will come to you, because that's like the biggest highway for divine manifestation, is the highway of love. Everything comes down there. Anything you can need will bring you to your destination in minutes.
Well,
follow that.
Pretty sage advice. Okay, so do you have any advice for folks your age, or you know, around your age, and you know a lot about what they're dealing with, and any advice for them or for their parents?
Oh gosh, I never thought I'd be giving advice to parents.
No, okay. Here's the reason I'm asking, is because you've obviously made some major breakthroughs, right? You have a capacity that is very valuable, and you know, nobody has to take this advice,
yeah.
Right? But I think it would be cool if you could offer some.
If there is a message that I could get out to every being on earth, if they could hear this and have it ring true in their heart, it would be to love no matter what. The answer is love. If you're mad at someone, if you don't know what to do, think of love. What would you do in love? And that will never do you wrong. You'll never, ever, ever, ever be misguided when you make choices in love and heart space. If you think, not even think, if you feel from your heart, don't think. Your mind will mislead you. Feel with your heart and you'll know what to do. Your intuition is the strongest guiding force you could ever follow, because through the heart and through the spirit is where your ascended masters talk to you. It's where the fairies talk to you, and the elves and the spiders and the butterflies and everyone that loves you and is watching you is communicating with you through the heart. And to parents, to younger folk like myself, who are very frustrated with authority, the answer is love. To parents who are frustrated with life, to members of our community who are lost, the answer is love. And don't ever lose that. When you see someone, say hi. I teach movement class, and for these little children, and this one girl was going on her first overnight camping trip, and she said, "I'm afraid." And I said, "Don't be afraid. Fear is stupid." And that is my biased opinion. Fear is stupid. Just do it. What's the worst that's going to happen? People say, "Why? Why not?" Why not? You know, something's going to come out of it. And I mean, when you're talking about like life or death situations, it's usually a maybe no-go sometimes, but in terms of going out and making that connection that you've been wanting to make, that person that you like and you want to interact with, just do it. Just go for it. Don't be afraid. You are supported and you are guided, and there are so many energies rooting for you and holding your hand. I think when I'm afraid, which happens all the time, even though I don't like it, I think of what I would love to relate to the universe is, in any situation, please, people, drop all expectations. Expectations are just little recipes for disaster and disappointment. And for the most part, if you go into a situation expecting something out of it, if you go into a relationship expecting something out of it, if you try and close expecting something from it, most of the time you'll be disappointed. If you go in and not expect anything, everything seems wonderful. If you walk into a coffee shop, you know, not expecting anything, you're just going into this random coffee shop and suddenly they have chocolate cheesecake or that favorite green tea that you like and this super foreign food from chocolate, I mean, the super foreign food from Ireland and like your favorite chocolate and what? That's the biggest bonus of the day, you know? But if you go in expecting to get a cup of coffee and they only have decaf, that kind of sucks. You know, and you can apply that to every situation in life. And I found that a really rewarding kind of, you know, little guideline to live by.
So do you have a spiritual guide that that we would recognize who you consult for this kind of stuff?
You know, I do. I do and I don't. I have my favorite angel to consult, but I'm not sure if you guys would know her.
Well, you don't have to share.
Otherwise, White Buffalo Calf Woman, I resonate with highly. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I pray and I talk and I sing and I dance with all the angels and with all the ascended masters and spirit guides. And I welcome all of their support and help. So I guess not.
No, that's good. Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're almost out of time. Is there anything, any final thoughts that you would like to share with our audience?
If any of you know of a movie store hiring, looking for someone who in the movie business, I'm just getting myself to put it out there.
Okay.
No. Well, yes, actually, I'm not kidding, but... If anyone ever needs anything, I'm here to listen and I'm here to talk. And please feel free to reach out to me and you can get in contact with Firefly Willows or John. And I'm sure the...
Firefly Willows LIVE is proud to support the Wildlife Center of Silicon Valley, a nonprofit rehabilitation, release, and educational facility. Established in 1993, WCSV serves the citizens and wildlife of Santa Clara County communities from Mountain View to Morgan Hill. Through educational programs, the WCSV fosters a positive coexistence between the general public and wildlife and encourages an interest in and concern for wildlife conservation issues. With approximately 120 dedicated volunteers, WCSV cares for over 4,000 birds and mammals from over 150 species each year. Find them at www.wcsv.org and on their Facebook page, Wildlife Center of Silicon Valley (WCSV). Donations to support the animals may be made by clicking the Donate Now button at the top right corner of their website. Further information on volunteering and support may be found under How to Help in the menu bar. This tip of the week from the Wildlife Center of Silicon Valley. It's squirrel season. As we head into the first birthing season for most tree squirrels in the Bay Area, be sure to keep an eye out for young ones on the ground. If you find a baby squirrel that has fallen from the nest, give the mother a chance to find and carry her baby to safety. After several hours, or if the animal is clearly injured, call the Wildlife Center at 408-929-9453 or visit their website for advice at www.wcsv.org.
Remember that wildlife rehabilitation centers give these animals the best opportunity for successful release.
Welcome back. This is Convergence. I'm your host, John Carosella. It's amazing the pathways I get led down when I'm doing journey work. I'd like to share one with you today that relates to the exploration of the divine feminine and was interesting and a little bit challenging for me. It was a while back. I was working in deep meditation when I was encouraged to go exploring the nature of plants. Plants, these amazing beings that capture the energy of the sun. They convert this primary source of energy for our world into their very bodies. Gathering water and carbon dioxide, they create sugars and starches, the cellulose that Then I was led to experience the rich lushness of green growth. I thought about and felt the vegetative vigor, the verdant flowing nature of plants, the seamlessness of their existence, growing and flowing continuously. Definitely an active principle at work here. And yet, as I contemplated, the green woman came to mind. Different from the green man of Celtic lore, the green woman is wildness in feminine character. Openly receptive, receiving light, receiving pollen, receiving bees and butterflies on her flowers, awash in the flowing play of life that is the woods, the forest, the pond's edge, the jungle. She is not exclusive, but inclusive, and she has very few rules. Sometimes she is but a quiet murmur, as in the forest in the wintertime. Sometimes she's in full song, in the effusiveness of spring, in the high times of summer. I thought about the high times of summer, and that brought to mind the fruit and the seeds. I thought about the generous application of energy in the production of sweet, juicy, full fruit and the seeds they carry. The gift of that fruit to the world of animals and insects, knowing that in return the seeds would be scattered, creating more children of the green woman wherever they fell. And I thought about the nature of the masculine principle in this process. It would seem to be that all that doing, all that creating of flower and fruit, would be a very divine masculine role. And yet, it is done by the mother. I slipped deeper into the connection with the green-blooded spirits. I reached deep into the experience of plant pregnancy. Something very strange and surprising revealed this. The surrender of ego was harder to see. So I shifted my field of view to the simplest creature about whom and about whose reproduction I was familiar. I connected to the yeast. Remember in school when we looked through the microscopes and observed asexual reproduction through a process called budding? Well, that was the yeast. In my mind's eye, I saw the yeast again. Myriad individual mothers, each offering herself to her daughters, and daughters becoming mothers of more daughters. The flow from one to the next was unbroken. A seamless bridge of energy marked only by the thinnest of lines, the cell membrane between mother and daughter. Often, the flow from mother to daughter was still in process when the offspring became a mother herself. It struck me that the flow from the self, the willingness of the mother to surrender to the need of the offspring, was an inseparable part of the nature of the divine feminine. The ego that I, and dare I say, much of my male cohort, find so difficult to shed, was in this process necessarily and automatically released. This capacity to surrender the self struck me as an essential and distinct part of the female nature, a true and beautiful aspect of the divine feminine. It is the nature of the mother to release herself from herself into her children. I could see it in the yeast. I could see it in the vines and bushes and trees bearing fruit. And I began to see it, glimpses of it anyway, in the animals too. It's not that the feminine is egoless, that's too simple. But it became so poignantly present, so clear to me, that intrinsic to the feminine is a willingness, a capacity to surrender to circumstances and destiny, even to the point of ego loss, because of the nature of their role as mothers. Even to the point of disappearing as an individual and becoming the background, the container, the substrate from which life emerges. On a grand scale, on a cosmic scale, it was shown to me vividly, purely, and absolutely. To me, it was both a beautiful and a terrifying revelation. I was paralyzed both with horror and awe. In the great arc of life, that ebb and flow of energy, the divine feminine is willing to disappear in service to life. It frightened me to have such power and still such willingness to surrender. It was, for a moment, almost too much. Since then, I have come to revisit this experience, this revelation, fairly often. What is the nature of a power so awesome and yet so humble? The Green Woman, indeed the goddess Donna herself, has such great love for the movement of life that she willingly surrenders herself to and for the process of living. This willingness is no theory. We see it in the surrender of the plants when we consume them. We see it in the gift of the mother's life force as it makes itself available to the life force of her offspring. It is interesting, and for me, challenging, to contemplate such power and vulnerability together in this grand receptive principle, this divine feminine. And this is one way I contemplate the goddess and the great, deep love she has for us. We'll be right back.
Be sure to join us next Tuesday at 8 p.m., February 19th, for the debut broadcast of A Shamanic Life with John Carosella. John brings together leaders and explorers in neo-shamanism. Practical and practiced, his guests are not just doing shamanism, they're living it. Tune into A Shamanic Life, the first and third Tuesday every month. Enjoy the Amethyst Oracle, Divination with a Queer Twist, with Heisey Lutmers and Charlie Harrington every second Tuesday. And catch What's Your Prescription for Balance with Mildred Lynn McDonald and Dr. Glenna Calder every first Thursday each month. We're excited. Give us a listen.
Welcome back. This is Convergence, and I'm your host, John Carosella. Next, I'd like to share with you a beautiful and powerful poem written and performed by a colleague and friend of mine, Maya Apollonia Rode. It's entitled The Sculptor and the Stone.
One day a sculptor, all alone, took a chisel to a stone, and with one movement of her hand, a world of time and space began. She chiseled here and chiseled there, and soon a universe appeared. She gave it color, she gave it sound, she gave it up and gave it down. She gave it hills and gave it trees. She gave it stars and galaxies. She gave it creatures of all sizes and all sorts of fun surprises, like eyes and ears and hands and feet, like soft. Some say the sculptor is no more. There's nowhere you can find her. Others say she's everywhere and nothing is behind her. You'll find opinions everywhere, but the answer's in your heart. You've always known the sculptor of this living work of art. And some would say through speculation and every sound, that's where the sculptor can be found. In all the feelings, all the sights, throughout your days and darkest nights, in everyone of every race, you behold the sculptor's face. And when they all look back at you, they behold the sculptor too. You are the hills, the stars, the trees, and endless possibilities, like birds that fly, and fish that swim, and oceans that they swim within. Just look, and you will see it's true. Everything's announcing you. Listen. You can hear the call of it, echoing, echoing. You are all of it.
So I hope you enjoyed that poem as much as I did, and we have the privilege of having the author and performance artist Maya Apollonia Rode on the show with us today to share her thoughts about it. So welcome, Maya.
Thank you. It's wonderful to join you.
It's great to connect with you again. And I really wanted to just say to you how powerful that poem was for me. The first time I heard it, it was powerful. But then as I had that experience with the Divine Mother through the experience of the plants, it just was truly a magical expression of that experience that I had, and it was extraordinary for me.
Wow.
So I wanted to say, first of all,
give life energy and the nature of non-separation. So it was kind of spontaneous and kind of intentional in that way.
Well, the line that created the transcendent experience for me was, and then she blew herself into it.
Mm.
And that, I don't know, kind of sacrifice, that willingness to give herself completely and disappear.
Yeah.
So extraordinary.
Yeah. That was the one for me also that was kind of the gift. And I think that's the line that really is the central, like, sort of power spot of the poem. And you know, when I reflect on sort of the meaning of that particular line, it is like there's this willingness to put her whole self into something, and I feel like that is, in a way, it's the nature of motherhood. I'm not a mother, but you know, from what I can feel and understand about that, that's the nature of motherhood. And it's also the nature of the creative process. You know, you can look at what you've been doing with your firefly willows and see, oh my gosh, you've been putting everything into that, you know? And there's this joy of giving oneself into the act of creation. And,
I like that's an interesting thing to reflect on, that it is part of the act of creation is the giving of the self. Wow, that's really cool. That's powerful too. Wow. So we can all experience a little bit of that willingness to surrender ourselves into the magic of our creation.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I think I almost want to say we do it all the time without realizing it. But, you know, there is something that we are all the time without realizing it, you know, and that's also what comes in more towards the end of the poem. You know, it's something that, you know, the nature of who we are in the depth of our reality, you know, that's always always there.
Mm. Wow, that's great. So I understand you are working on another project, and this is going to be part of it? Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I'm currently revising this poem to prepare it to be published as a children's book. And that is interesting for me because it's really requiring a lot from me to revise it in such a way. I'm working with an editor coach who is asking me to do things that I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to, you know, fulfill this sort of request. And so it's really drawing a lot out of me, but it's also really bringing forth new elements and making the poem, I think, more of what it really wants to be. For example, the sense that it's a creation myth, and there's a desire to sort of bridge all these different ways of understanding, like there's the Big Bang and that's how the world started, or there's God the Creator and that's how it started, or there's Mother Earth and that, you know, like these different elements, and to kind of combine them all or offer hints of any one of those traditions, like one myth that kind of touches upon all these different things. And one of the things that's coming out in this rewrite is actually related to that part where she breathes herself into her creation. And it relates to this quote I like to use when I'm talking about this poem by a Persian poet, Ghalib. He said, "In the desire of the one to know its own beauty, we exist." And so, in a way, it's like, yes, she's giving her whole self into this, but when she's in it, then she gets to see, she gets to be inside of her creation. And wow, that's an awesome thing for her.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of turns the selfless thing on its head in a way, like, you know, spiritual teachers have said, you know, when you take selflessness far enough, it becomes selfish, really. Because when you know that you are the whole, anything you do to serve the whole serves yourself.
Right, right,
you know?
Right.
So anyway, she gets to go inside her creation. And then, you know, there's the invitation for the reader to see, oh, that I'm not separate from the Creator.
Mm.
That this is, that actually it's kind of her looking through my eyes.
Wow.
And one of my favorite little rewrite lines I'll just mention is, you know, there's the line in the poem, "You'll find opinions everywhere." And then the rewrite is, "You'll find opinions everywhere, but none of them are true. The only real answer is the one inside of you."
Oh, that's great. That's great. All right. Well, Maya, thank you so much for sharing this poem with the world and sharing your time with us today.
Oh, well, thank you, John, for sharing it.
We'll look forward to hearing more from you and about your work coming up in the months to come.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
Enjoying today's show? Want to share it with a friend? Or maybe you've missed one of our previous programs. Well, you can always find the archives of our past shows on fireflywillows.com/live. Stop by and check out John's previous programs or shows from one of our other hosts, Mildred Lynn McDonald or Heisi Luttmers. Our live call-in shows are available too. Join us.
Hi, I'm John, and I'm fire.
Hi, I'm Deb, and I'm water.
And welcome to a special edition of our occasional segment, Fire and Water, with your hosts, John and Deb.
Hi.
So this is a special edition because I want to highlight the... So you've been pregnant, have you not?
Once or twice, actually three times. Yes.
Three times.
Mm-hmm.
So not having had that opportunity myself...
Mm-hmm.
But I've done some journey work and kind of been shown this nature of the mother carrying life. I wanted to learn from you or have you share What was it like? What was it like being pregnant?
Well, for me, it was an event that I thoroughly enjoyed. From the time that I was a little kid, wanted to be a mom. It was never something that I had any doubts or, reservations about. It was something that it was just sort of a, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be a mom someday. And when the opportunity presented itself, when we first got pregnant with our daughter, I was thrilled.
So you were, I guess, emotionally ready and excited.
Yes. When we found out we were expecting our daughter, it was not necessarily something that we had planned for right at that time. But the discovery that I was pregnant was definitely an exciting and happy one.
Okay. Why was it exciting? What made it exciting?
Well, it was something that I had always hoped would be part of the fear. The fear part comes for me was, will everything be okay? Will the baby be healthy? Will the labor and delivery be all right? Will I be okay? Mm. Is anything going to happen that's not good?
Okay. All right. So what did it feel like to, you realized you were pregnant, and at some point you started to physiologically feel things?
Yes, eventually you do.
What did you feel?
Bubbles.
Bubbles.
Yes. The very first time that you are aware, I mean, mentally, intellectually, you are aware that there is another being inside of your body. But at first, except for the fact that you're perhaps have morning sickness or you're nauseous or you're particularly tired, because I remember being extremely tired, there's not really any other obvious indication that you're different from any other female on the street, right? And you personally haven't really felt anything either. And that very first time that the baby is large enough to make its presence known on a physical level inside your body, it's a shock. First off, it's a like, what was that kind of feeling? Mm-hmm. And it felt like little bubbles. It was like, but it wasn't like, oh, a gas or digestive movement. It was separate and different.
Did that, those bubbles bring awareness to a part of you that you had never felt before?
A part of myself that I'm not exactly sure what you're asking me.
I guess your womb space kind of now had a different
excitement of, wow, that was, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to suddenly you wake up and you go, oh, whoa, there's something inside me,
Okay, but what about that? Oh, my goodness, there's something inside me. How did that impact your sense of self, of your sense of sovereignty, your control over your body?
I think because it was something that I was happy about, something that I was desirous of, there wasn't anything negative about inherent abilities of what this physical body could do.
Oh, okay. So you took it as a discovery of capacity.
Yeah.
And you thought that was neat.
Yeah. And I liked it.
Okay, so what did you like about it? What did you like? Why did you like it?
Well, in particular, during my first pregnancy, because it was a brand new experience for me, I found that I kept thinking, wow, this is like, it's so unique. Not everybody can do this. And I'm very special right now because this is happening. This is happening within me. This is happening to me, with me. I'm participating in something. I felt like I was a member of this very, very special elite club. I really did. I knew that it was kind of a strange, feeling, but that's what it was like. It was like, I remember, because I was working outside of the home at the time, and I would have to walk down various sidewalks to get to the building that I needed to go into to go to work, and there's plate glass windows and everything. And I remember just occasionally, you turn your head and you see your reflection in the glass and just thinking, wow, that person, because at that point I was showing and it was obvious that I was carrying a child, not everybody, this is different. Not everybody can be this. And I am it right now. And it was very fulfilling for me.
And did you think about that in terms of not everybody being like...
Truly enjoyed being pregnant. I enjoyed
Why?
Being pregnant each and every time I was pregnant, all three times.
Why? How did it shift your feelings? What did it do?
It made me special. And I enjoyed being special, even if it was in my own mind at that point in time. It was something that I liked being.
What did you like about being that way? I mean, other than the fact that you were special, but, you know, you've
right.
been special for a lot of reasons. What was it about this one that...
Well, it's a privilege. You had a part in doing that. And I found that to be very fulfilling.
You said earlier when we were just chatting something about completeness.
For me, yes. It was a very strong sense of completeness. It was never part of my experience as a child and thinking about who I was and what I would be that I didn't want to be a mom.
Mm.
And so having the opportunity to be a mom, to go through that process, was a completeness. It was a, this is why I'm here, this is what I want, I get to experience this, and it made me happy. It made me fulfilled.
Mm. And the birth, when the baby is no longer inside and part of you, psychologically, what was the impact of that?
It's, there's a bit of terror involved. When the baby hasn't yet been born, you have complete control. You take care of yourself, you try to eat correctly, you don't do things that are dangerous for the baby, and odds are, as long as there's not some sort of medical problem, baby's great, baby's happy, nothing's going on, nothing can harm the baby.
Mm.
There's no outside influence that's going to, you know, there's nothing unforeseen, you know.
Right.
Once the baby is no longer a part of your person, when the baby is now a separate entity, not the baby is a separate entity. It is itself. It has its own needs, its own, you know, it could be a crier. It could be a really happy baby. It could be you no longer have any, you know, it's a whole new ballgame. You're now dealing with a person as opposed to a gestating baby.
Hmm.
And it's different.
So, not relief.
Well, relief...
I mean, other than the fact that, you know, 9 months pregnant, everybody wants to get the baby out, right?
Yes. So, 9 months pregnant, your body is starting to get a little tired. You're it's not comfortable. And the anticipation, because this is what you've been building for, so mm-hmm. that anticipation of, okay, we're getting there, and when's it going to occur? And then the day arrives, the delivery begins, baby is born, and especially if it's your first child, and you haven't had a great deal of experience with raising children or being around children that were being raised and are very young, it's overwhelming. It can be very intimidating. You now have a very, very needy human being that you are responsible for.
Well, you had that before. You had a very, very needy human being that you were responsible for. They were just taken care of inside of you.
Yes, so I didn't have to do anything. I didn't, and there were no, if the baby was up all night, I knew it perhaps because I didn't get to sleep as comfortably because of the baby was moving or there was kicking or whatever. But it's not the same as a child who's screaming for 3 hours straight. In the middle of the night.
Right.
It's not the same as trying to understand what the needs of this little tiny individual are and how you can satisfy them. It's like all I needed to do was just do what I was doing while I was pregnant.
Mm. And And your whole pregnancy, the arc of your pregnancy through delivery, you were pretty good at.
It was, I guess, pretty good at from the point of view of it was very uneventful. There were no, it was very easy for me. I enjoyed being pregnant. The mild inconveniences of having morning sickness, of being nauseous, of being uncomfortable, of not being able to sit down and stand up without realizing
having
that...
Having to pee all the time.
Well, yes, having to go to the bathroom all the time. Those didn't bother me. They weren't overly annoying for me. They were just part of the process, and I was not unhappy with the process. It didn't, you know, I wasn't as sick as some women get. I wasn't as uncomfortable as some women are. I didn't get as much, you know, the physical discomforts of water gain or whatever never affected me severely. And so for me, it was not there wasn't a great deal of discomfort. It was not a horrible process. Having the children, the labor and delivery part, compared to many stories and many personal accounts of friends that who have also had children, again, it was not it was short, it was sweet, it happened, and boom, there was no issues.
Yeah, not a lot of drama.
No.
Cool. All right. Anything else you want to share about being an expectant mother, about being the divine feminine?
only the reiteration of, for myself personally, it was something that I had always wanted, something that I desired, something that I was immensely pleased to be able to participate in, and it felt complete. It was a completion of something, and I loved being unique and special part of a little club that not everyone is able to participate in, even though it's a very short time period. Of course, you're a mom, and you're a mom for life, which is also wonderful. But I liked being pregnant, and I would have had more than three children if we didn't have so many people already in the world, because it was really something that I enjoyed.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much for sharing.
Appreciate sure. It. No problem.
We'll be right back.
Life comes at you pretty fast, and you're doing the best you can. But maybe you could use a little help. Are you looking for answers or feeling a little stuck? Something nagging you that you and your doctor can't quite explain? Or maybe you're looking to enhance your game or improve your performance at work. Consider a visit with John Carosella at The Shamanist. Whether you need a little guidance or even a little miracle, John can help. Visit in person or connect by phone or Skype. Schedule a rune, oracle, or tarot reading. Experience a shamanic counseling session or a Reju Kido or shamanic healing session for body and soul. Experience more of your world and yourself. The sky's the limit when you tap into the realities that are just beyond our sight. Mention this ad and receive a special gift when you book your first session with John. For a little help, or maybe a little miracle, theshamanist.com.
Well, once again, I feel a great privilege to have hosted this show and feel blessed by the wisdom and the gifts and insights of my guests. The Divine Feminine is still a mystery to me. It's still a frightening power for what it represents and what it challenges me to embrace. Willingness, surrender, vulnerability. These states of being are sources of great power. As alien as that sounds and as frightening as that feels to me, I know it's true. And the guests on today's program have witnessed to that truth. The challenge I feel is to embrace receptivity and willingness, to relinquish a deeply held and jealously guarded temperament of control, determination, and intensity.
There is an opportunity here, almost a rite of passage, wherein I know that, should I have the courage to take it up, I could be changed irrevocably. It feels like surrender. Not the giving up, but the letting down. The letting down of a shield. It's a shield that masquerades as purposeful activity. It's composed of intensity and will, of action driven by ego, and the seemingly common sense control that is required to live a purposeful life. But perhaps this is not so. Perhaps the purpose is not to do, but to be. The 15th century Dutch-Italian philosopher Spinoza said, "To be all one is capable of being, and to become all one is capable of becoming, is the only end in life." I have the enthusiastic, passionate, becoming part well rehearsed. Time, perhaps, to practice joyfully being. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed the program as much as I did in its creation. Join us again next time.
A personal tarot reading can offer you insight, information, enlightenment, and empowerment along your life's path. Hi-C is a professional tarot conversationalist and ritualist with over 10 years' experience. He's available for readings in a variety of formats, including parties and events. To schedule your personal tarot reading, contact Hi-C at tarotbyhic.net or email him at hic@fireflywillows.com. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. Next week, join Hi-C Luttmers and John Carosella for live on-air readings. They'll be consulting the tarot, runes, and animal medicine to offer guidance for your questions. This is Deb Carosella. Please join us next Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Firefly Willows LIVE, Blog Talk Radio.